Blog Talk Radio. Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello, and welcome to Smoke News Radio. My name is Jason Brodsky, and I'm your host tonight. Let's go. The first we have on Smoke News Radio is from News Channel 5 Action Karate News. Mother of son with epilepsy advocates for medical marijuana before bill is shot down. Written by Kyle Oran. In Nashville, Tennessee, legislation to allow sick people to have medical marijuana obtained from other states failed in a House committee Tuesday. HB 880 would have created a study in Tennessee where sick people who believed they could benefit from medical marijuana could possess the drug in small amounts. Tennessee high school students Holly Ramsey spoke with many lawmakers about the bill. Her 9-year-old son, TJ Ramsey, suffers from epilepsy, and she says he could benefit from the drug if they could just get it legally. Ramsey quotes, "What that does for us is makes us able to use the medication here, and it becomes of his medical record and therefore part of the medical decisions and made regarding his treatment and health. Hopefully, even if I don't have 100% control of his seizures, even if I only have 5 a day, you know, it would make a huge difference in his life." Currently, TJ has about 10 seizures a day. Each one lasts for about 10 minutes, and there's a 20-minute period afterward where TJ has struggled communicating with, is extremely tired. During Tuesday's House Criminal Justice Committee discussions, TJ experienced 3 seizures before he and his mother could tell their story to legislators. Law enforcement testified that they believe the state could get in trouble with the federal government and potentially increase drug-related arrests in the state. They said they don't want medical marijuana legalized. Governor Bill Lee also reinforced his position against medical marijuana. The bill narrowly failed in an 8-9 vote. Thank you. Next on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky from KELOland.com. Rapid City mother arrested after her 2 children consume marijuana edibles. Rapid City, South Dakota. A Rapid City mother is facing charges after her 2 children ate some marijuana edibles, according to authorities. The 2 children, ages 10 and 11, ate the edibles and became ill at school. The children were taken to the hospital and stayed overnight due to the overdose. Both children have since recovered. 36-year-old suspect is charged with possession of a controlled substance and contributing to the delinquency of a minor or abuse neglect of a minor. Next, on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, from WY0FILE.com. The Trojan horse in Wyoming's marijuana legalization bill. The House Judiciary Committee's vote to move House Bill 209, Regulation of Marijuana, to the floor finally exposes the medical marijuana myth. Let me explain. HB 209 is an 85-page document that, if passed, will allow full legalization of marijuana and retail sales in the state. For an unknown reason, this bill is modeled after a Virginia bill that just passed a few weeks ago and is scheduled to be implemented over the next several years. In other words, an untested blueprint. It would also make Wyoming the first state to legislatively go straight to full legalization without the Trojan horse intermediate step of legalizing medical marijuana first. According to Wyo File, a marijuana lobbyist, Christine Steinquist, acknowledges Representative Jared Olson's from Cheyenne's bill takes a stride beyond the usual discrimination approach, which is to start with a baby step of medical authorization. This is a retail bill, she says. Of the 30-plus states that allow some type of medical marijuana, all but one state's measure was accomplished by public referendum, not legislative action. The marijuana industry has targeted mostly those states that allow a public referendum because they have not had success getting laws passed through deliberative legislative bodies. The referendum process bypasses informed debate. Of those states now allowing medical marijuana, over a dozen have been substantially successfully targeted to allow full retail marijuana, again accomplished by public referendum. The medical marijuana myth has been shown to be the successful gateway to full retail marijuana, hence a Trojan horse. You may ask how this medical marijuana Trojan horse relates to House Bill 209. Well, the sponsors acknowledge this bill may not pass, but it was passed out of the Judiciary Committee, saying it should be brought to the floor for more debate and possible amendments. It's a classic negotiating technique to ask for the moon full retail, but settle for what you can get medical. Buried at page 48 in this bill is a medical marijuana provision under Article 5, 1152-505, possession or distribution of marijuana for medical purposes permitted. It may be the hope from the sponsors that the poorly supported retail portions of HB 209 could be gutted by amendments, leaving some type of medical exception at the heart of the bill that could get traction. This is a Trojan horse. This tactic exposes the myth of medical marijuana. I won't debate the known potential or mythical medicinal properties of cannabis sativa, but to be clear, whether medical or retail, it's the same plant. One popular emotional argument for medical marijuana is that people in need can't get their medicine. Who wants to prevent that? That's why polls show support for medical, but less for retail. Interestingly, during the pandemic, several states with both retail and medical marijuana closed the retail shops but declared the medical stores essential businesses. Guess what? Applications for medical cards went through the roof. Who knew so many users needed their medicine? Really, it's all about getting access to the drug however it's labeled. Wyoming citizens need to closely watch the debate on this bill. It is a complicated and extensive bill, took time to craft. However, it was filed last minute. I believe this was done on purpose so as to limit public awareness prior to the hearings by the Judiciary Committee. The hearing combined Housing Bill 209 along with postponed hearing on House Bill 82, implementation requirements for medical marijuana. A medical marijuana feasibility study. As the hearing opened, Chairman Olson stated that the merits of medical marijuana were not the heart of what comments he wanted to hear on HB 209. Yet 80% of the testimony allowed had to do with mostly anecdotal information about the benefits of medical marijuana and not the retail aspects of the bill, and almost nothing on Housing Bill 82. I guess the advancement of Housing Bill 209 should have been expected. After all, Olson was a sponsor of Housing Bill 209 and left his chair to introduce the bill. Representatives Carly Provenza from Laramie and Michael Yin of Jackson and Dan Zwanzinger of Cheyenne were on the committee and co-sponsor of the bill. That's 4 votes in the bag before the hearing began. Olson then directed his chair to direct the hearing on his own bill. I don't know what the ethics involved here are, but it seems to me that a sponsor of a bill should not be involved in moving it through a committee he or she chairs. Medical marijuana may not be the only Trojan horse at work here. All right. That's an interesting one. Got to get it through whatever way they're doing. People, money at hand, lots of money. Next on Smoke News Radio, episode 82, with your action host, Jason Brodsky, we've got what you should do if you can smell someone smoking cannabis next door, from somersetlive.co.uk. If you can smell something that definitely isn't a barbecue. There's an action you can take. Cannabis, more commonly known as weed, smells a lot, and smoking it or even being in possession of it is very much illegal. It is known to create a strong smell that lingers in the air, and neighbors are most likely to be able to identify the waft as it spreads. The substance remains illegal in the United Kingdom despite sustained efforts to legalize it, and it is considered a Class B drug. You may have neighbors that continue to smoke weed and wonder whether there is anything you can do about the stink. Here are some of the key things that you can do if you suspect that cannabis is being used in your area. Can people smoke cannabis on their own property legally? The answer is absolutely not. Any suggestion that you're allowed to is an urban myth. A police spokesman told Derbyshire Live, quoted, "The possession of cannabis is an offense and will be dealt with by police. It is a widespread issue, and we are focusing our resources to target those connected with the cultivation and the dealing of the drug to help crack down on the issue. We would encourage anyone who suspects drug activity in their community to call us." If I call the police, will my neighbors know it was me who told the officers? A spokesman said the police would never give away a caller's identity. She said, "We wouldn't say information has come from a neighbor, as that narrows it down. We just say we received a call." She added that officers on patrol might also use tip-offs to inform where they go on patrol. Puff puff, knock knock. Next on Smoke News Radio, episode 82, 85, yeah, two upside down and in the mirror. health.ucsd.edu, through a little study, that funding for this research came in part from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, titled, "Cannabis Use Disorder Rate Rose Among Pregnant Women Between 2001 and 2012. A study of almost 5 million live births in California by researchers at the Herbert Wertheim School of Public Health and Human Longevity Science at University of California, San Diego, reports that babies born to mothers diagnosed with cannabis use disorder were more likely to experience negative health outcomes such as preterm birth and low birth weight than babies born to mothers without a cannabis use disorder diagnosis. The findings are published online in the April 22nd, 2021, conveniently, issue of the journal Addiction. The National Institute on Drug Abuse, part of the National Institutes of Health, funded the study. Cannabis use disorder is a diagnostic term with specific criteria that defines continued cannabis use despite consequent clinically significant impairments. The research team, led by the first author, Yuyan Shi, I don't know what that means, clinically defined continued cannabis use despite consequent. Okay, what's the consequent? Clinically significant impairments. The research term, led by first author Yuyan Shi, PhD, associate professor at the Herbert Wertheim School of Public Health, conducted a retrospective cohort study of 4.83 million mothers who delivered live single births in California from 2001 to 2012. They identified 20,237 women who were discharged after delivery with a diagnosis of cannabis use disorder. Not all people who use cannabis meet the criteria for cannabis use disorder. The study authors stated the actual incidence of cannabis use disorder is likely higher than reported numbers. The researchers found that diagnosis of cannabis use disorder based on medical records at time of delivery rose from 2.8 to 6.9 per 1,000 deliveries from 2002 to 2012, compared to a matched control group of 40,474 mother-infant pairs. Infants born to women with cannabis use disorder were more likely to be born preterm, having a low birth weight, and be small for their gestational age, all factors that can require greater or more intense medical care or presage later health issues. Cannabis use disorder in pregnant women has been linked to adverse outcomes such as preterm births and low birth weight. Additionally, researchers found, though rare overall, less than 1%, the risk of infant mortality was greater for infants born to women with cannabis use disorder. These infants were 35% more likely to die within a year of birth than infants in the control group. Conversely, these infants were also less likely to be hospitalized within the first year of life than control group infants. Because we are looking only at medical records, there is a lot we don't know about mothers and infants in this study, said author Shi, but our analysis supports the recommendation that health professionals screen for and address cannabis use disorder in their pregnant clients to protect both their health and potentially the health of their infants. Currently, screening for cannabis use or related disorders is not standard practice during pregnancy health care, though marijuana is the illicit drug most commonly used by pregnant women, typically to self-treat depression, anxiety, stress, pain, nausea, and vomiting, often during the first trimester. It is also not standard of care to provide counsel on the lack of safety data around cannabis use during pregnancy. Both strategies may be helpful, as well as encouraging patients to discontinue use of cannabis during pregnancy and while breastfeeding, and referring to treatment when appropriate. According to a 2018 published study, approximately 7% of pregnant women self-reported marijuana use, with rates as high as 10% among women ages 18 to 25, rates based on urine toxicology were even higher, with 19% of pregnant women ages 18 to 25 screening positive for marijuana use. Previous research has found that tetrahydrocannabinol, the psychoactive compound in cannabis, can reach fetuses and infants through the placenta and breast milk. Respectively, THC disrupts the normal function of the endocannabinoid system, which has been shown to play a key role in pregnancy, including implantation of the embryo in the uterus and maintenance of the placenta. Written by Bin Zhu of UC San Diego and Di Liang of UC San Diego and Fundan University, China. Next, a little lighter on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. From Wikileaf.com, two of a kind, the surprising reality of THC and CBD weed plants. Cannabis is the weed plant we know and love. Whether you are growing it for CBD, THC, or both, current laws and sheer volume of misinformation surrounding the cultivation of cannabis make it challenging to sort out facts from fiction. Myth number one, as we bust some myths, learn about the complex legal botanical situation of weed. Plants that contain CBD or THC come from different lineages. Myth one. Botanically speaking, weed or pot or hemp is classified in the genus Cannabis. Cannabis originated in Central Asia, likely at higher altitudes in places like the Himalayan foothills. Over time, people moved these plants around the globe, and people kept on growing what they liked the best. This selection by people led to different chemicals like THC and CBD being the most predominant in the plant's ability to produce. People selected for the cannabis plant's ability to produce grain, fiber, or taste and smell good. In the industry, we can call plants that are grown for clothing or rope fiber, or edible hemp hearts, fiber, or grain type. Cannabis grown for the different chemicals that we enjoy are useful, are called drug types. Let's dive into some detail on these drug types. Drug types have been planted because these cannabis plants are the best at producing an array of chemicals. These plants are bred to produce more or less of the chemicals we are interested in. Cannabinoids, and terpenes. Cannabinoids like THC and CBD are very familiar to people in the United States. There is a wide variety of other cannabinoids that are starting to appear in the United States marketplace, like CBG and CBC. Terpenes often give the distinctive aroma and taste to cannabis, just like terpenes give aroma and taste for other plants like lavender or rosemary. Taken together, the types of cannabinoids and terpenes in a plant are summed up as chemotype. The genetic makeup of the plant is summed up as a genotype. Myth number two. Sativa-dominant and indica-dominant plants are distinct genotypes. If you've always believed in myth number two, you are not alone. It wasn't until after 2016 that advanced genetics experiments revealed this was a myth, and there is no real distinction between plants called sativa or indica, and it does not guide anyone's high despite all the marketing and anecdotal evidence. The high you experience comes from the chemotype of the plant. For example, a product in a store labeled as a sativa might have an identical chemotype to another product labeled as indica. That doesn't help you determine what to purchase, and scientists have determined it doesn't make any scientific sense to call one sativa and the other indica. In summary, the proper classification of the plant is cannabis sativa, and you have to look at the plant's chemotype and genotype to understand how it will affect you and how it is legally regulated. Myth number three, hemp and marijuana are different plants. Whether you are buying hemp from an online retailer or picking up marijuana from a licensed dispensary, it all comes from cannabis sativa. Likewise, all cannabis sativa thrives using the same gardening techniques, just the same because they are the same plants. The distinction between hemp and marijuana is a legal one. In states that have enabled recreational, medical, or adult use laws, cannabis sativa can be labeled medical marijuana. Recreational marijuana, or just marijuana, depending on how the law was enacted. These state-specific laws allow people to consume products with levels of THC that are above 3.3%, whereas these products are still not allowed on the federal level. This is why it is still illegal to buy seeds that grow into THC-producing plants from anywhere but a state-licensed dispensary in your state. Federal law, with the passage of the 2014 and 2018 Farm Bills, continues to define and regulate cannabis sativa that has THC below 0.3%. Federal law calls this THC below 0.3% plant industrial hemp. Products defined as industrial hemp are what you can purchase online, ship across state lines, and buy virtually anywhere. You can even purchase hemp plants legally and have hemp plants shipped directly to your door for growing your own CBD at home. Genotype is what makes THC and CBD plants different. Whether a plant has the right genes that allow the plant to make THC, CBD, or any other cannabinoids is what really matters. It is absolutely possible to have plants that are genetically identical in every way except for one genetic difference. One plant has the genes that allow it to make THC, and the other has the genes that allow it to make CBD. They could smell the same, taste the same, and grow the same. It is that simple. THC and CBD really are, botanically speaking, just sisters, separated at birth. Next on Smoke News Radio, with your host, Jason Brodsky. We've got from Natives News Online. Myths about marijuana addiction that should be left in the past. Written by Danielle and read to you by Jason. Though cannabis was permitted in America for much longer than it was outlawed, no one alive today remembers a time before the 1937 Marijuana Act when the federal government fully prohibited the sale and consumption of weed across all states. For the most of the 20th century, propaganda regarding pot use was abundant, and despite some research that demonstrated cannabis's relative safety and even applicability to medical treatment, most Americans have long continued to believe that weed is one of the most dangerous substances known to mankind. Fortunately, attitudes towards cannabis have shifted in the 21st century, but beliefs about cannabis addiction remain mirrored in the past. Here are a few misconceptions about cannabis use and addiction that we need to overcome in the coming years. It is impossible to be addicted to cannabis. Unfortunately, the biggest myth concerning cannabis addiction is that it does not exist, yet unequivocally, research demonstrates that cannabis addiction is real. Sufferers can experience both physical and psychological dependence on cannabis, enduring hallmark addiction symptoms like cravings and withdrawal, as well as more subtle effects like lacking control over use, using in high-risk situations, struggling to maintain relationships or occupation, and more. Technically, cannabis addiction is called cannabis use disorder or marijuana use disorder by professionals. However, the compulsion for an individual afflicted with this disorder to use cannabis is as dangerous and destructive as any addiction to any other substance or behavior. Cannabis use disorder that goes untreated is likely to cause an individual substantial harm, particularly in terms of mental and social health. Fortunately, states that have legalized cannabis typically use tax revenues to fund cannabis use disorder rehabilitation programs so sufferers can find help. cannabis addiction causes violence and criminality. This is one of the oldest myths regarding cannabis consumption and is also one of the longest debunked. In fact, one of the first reports on the individual and community effects of cannabis consumption, the Indian Hemp Drugs Commission report of 1894, concluded that there is no adequate ground for believing that cannabis injuriously affects the character of the consumer. Quote, in other words, over 100 years ago, researchers were quite certain that cannabis use didn't cause moral depravity or criminality. This myth was perpetrated in America largely after the turn of the 20th century, when a large number of immigrants from Central and South America began entering the United States in search of high-paying industrial jobs. Few Americans used hemp recreationally. Cannabis was mostly consumed in tinctures and tonics to improve health. However, Latin American immigrants enjoyed smoking marijuana as a cultural pastime. Xenophobic and racist, the white Americans of the time suspected that these new immigrant communities would increase crime and immorality in the United States cities, and they linked these fears directly with cannabis consumption. Almost every decade since 1940 has seen the release of a new report that asks the question, does cannabis use increase aggression and violence? Without exception, the findings state that the issue is a bit more complicated than that. Individual consumers who use weed are not more likely to commit violent acts or engage in crime, even after developing a substance use disorder. However, the very act of prohibiting cannabis sale and consumption means that marijuana does increase crime rates. Infrequent or moderate users need to break the law to acquire weed, and criminal organizations tend to develop around cultivation and distribution of marijuana. By legalizing cannabis, states are likely to see lower cannabis crime rates because those afflicted by substance abuse won't need to succumb to extreme measures to get their fix. Cannabis is a gateway drug to harder narcotics. The term gateway drug has almost exclusively been applied to cannabis, which is also true to the term soft drug. People who use these terms tend to agree that cannabis itself isn't particularly dangerous, either to the health of the individual or the safety of the community. They might not believe that cannabis addiction exists, or they might doubt that cannabis use disorder is as much of a concern as substance abuse with harder narcotics like heroin, cocaine, or methamphetamine. The idea that cannabis is a gateway to other drugs is founded on the idea that once someone experiences psychoactive effects, they will continue to pursue that experience to devastating ends. As one gains tolerance to cannabis, one will search for a substance with greater effects, and those substances tend to be more immediately physically dangerous to users. However, researchers on cannabis consumption believe a more accurate term for cannabis is a terminus drug, meaning that once a user tries cannabis, they are more likely to stop sampling other drugs. In fact, cannabis use is so sticky as a substance that legal dispensaries in states like Maryland decrease opioid-related overdoses and deaths. Researchers believe that the desire to use opioids decreases with legal weed, in part because medical patients have a safer alternative, and in part because recreational users don't have to break the law to find a mind-altering experience. Cannabis is no longer a niche issue. More states are legalizing cannabis consumption and sale, which means more people need to learn the truth about how cannabis can affect individual users and communities, sorting the truth from the fiction regarding cannabis addiction is a good place to start. All right. You guys are great out there. Smoke News Radio. We've got the goods for you. Next, from jdsupra.com. And where's that phone? Too many devices and lights are off because I got the show going. The go show. Hope you guys are enjoying the fun. It's a good time. You know, the world's a fun place. Here, let me double check on the universe. Sometimes people call in and actually want to talk. It's not really like, you know, a talking show. But oh, look. There we go. I don't see anybody. Okay, cool. Next, on Smoke News Radio, with your host, Jason Brodsky, we've got from jdsupra.com, Cannabis Trademarks 101. In an industry that runs on innovation and differentiation, a cannabis brand's identity is among its most valuable and most prone to copying assets. It's a common myth that cannabis industry brands cannot get trademark protection. In fact, many cannabis-related trademarks are registered with the United States Patent and Trademark Office, including U.S. Weed Channel, MedMen, Cheech's Private Stash, and Got Gummies, to name a few. Why do cannabis businesses need trademarks? For brand protection in a competitive industry. Name disputes are easier and less costly to resolve, creates goodwill and improves customer loyalty, establishes a tangible asset that can be licensed, transferred, and assigned a monetary value. It gives you the right to sue infringers in federal district court and seek greater damages. Note, your trade name, DBA, is not a trademark. What types of trademarks are available for cannabis businesses? Following the enactment of the 2018 Farm Bill, trademark registration for hemp and hemp-derived CBD products and services are federally available with the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Products regulated by the FDA, such as food, beverages, and dietary supplements, may face additional obtaining USPTO approval. Federal USPTO registration may be available for non-plant-touching businesses as well as for products or services that don't involve the CSA, including products such as apparel, lighters, ashtrays, rolling papers, vaporizers, and websites. Generally, there is a path available for achieving some United States Patent and Trade Office registration for brands in cannabis, hemp, or CBD industries. Registration for ancillary products or services is better than no registration at all. For example, several dozen VS clients have recently approval for their marks from the United States Patent and Trade Office. State trademark registrations and common law trademark rights may be available for cannabis brands in states that have legalized cannabis. What can a trademark protect? Names, logos, taglines, packaging, sounds, smells, colors. No, before you get too far into branding your company, products, or services, it's a good idea to reach out to a trademark attorney. You don't want to spend too much time or money on ideas or designs you can't mark. What makes a unique trademark and which types are stronger? Simply put, the more generic your trademark, the easier it is for others to challenge. In the cannabis industry, you should avoid using terms such as green, kush, canna, 420, THC, Mary Jane, and weed because they are extremely common. Don't believe us? Just do a web search. The more distinctive your trademark, the better. Distinctive marks are considered strong as they are the hardest to challenge. Fanciful trademarks are typically the most distinctive and hardest to challenge, as they are invented solely to function as a trademark. Examples of fanciful marks include Leafly and TH Cheese. Arbitrary trademarks are also distinctful. Those strong marks are composed of a common word that is unrelated to the good or service for which the trademark is used. Examples include Level Blends and ROAM. Suggestive marks describe some aspect of the product or service. The type of mark is helpful for marketing and advertising, as it usually hints at a product or service. For example, 7-Point, Relief, and Royal Highness. Descriptive and generic are the weakest types of trademarks. These types are not as distinct, therefore easier to challenge, but widely used in the cannabis industry. Descriptive marks are usually adjectives that describe a product or service. This includes location-based words, surnames, and alternative spellings. Examples of this type include THC Designs, Humboldt Green, and Los Angeles Chronic. Generic terms typically describe a category or type of product or service and can never receive a trademark protection. Example of this type include Denver Dispensary and Smoke Shop. For more on trademarks, including common pitfalls, strategies to differentiate your mark, how to avoid infringing on your marks, All right. Videos from Sarah Aisian and Eric Pelton and Jeffrey Welsh. All right. Thank you guys for listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Let's see if we can get somewhat into this next one here. Next on Smoke News Radio from Healthline.com. Can you overdose on marijuana? Separating myth from fact. Can you overdose on cannabis? This question is controversial even among people who frequently use cannabis. Some people believe cannabis is as dangerous as opioids or stimulants, while others believe it's completely harmless and has no side effects. You can't overdose on cannabis in the way you can overdose on, say, opioids. To date, there have not been any reported deaths resulting solely from cannabis use, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But that doesn't mean you can't overdo it or have a bad reaction to cannabis. There isn't a straightforward answer here because everybody's different. Some people seem to tolerate cannabis well, while others don't tolerate it well at all. Cannabis products also vary greatly in their potency. Edibles. Woo, good stuff. Edibles, however, seem to be more likely to cause a negative reaction. This is partly because they take a long time to kick in. After eating an edible, it can take anywhere from 20 minutes to 2 hours before you start to feel the effects. In the meantime, many people end up eating more because they mistakenly believe the edibles are weak. Mixing cannabis with alcohol can also cause a negative reaction for some people. Cannabis products contain high levels of THC, the chemical that makes you feel high or impaired, and can also cause a bad reaction in some people, especially those who don't use cannabis often. And this could include confusion, thirstiness or dry mouth, concentration problems, slower reaction times, dry eyes, fatigue or lethargy, headaches, dizziness, increased heart rate, and anxiety, and other changes in mood. And in rare cases, marijuana can also cause hallucinations, paranoia and panic attacks, nausea and vomiting. So be careful out there in marijuana world, and try not to go overboard. Much love, everyone. Please enjoy the news from Jack Johnson. This has been Jason Brodsky, your host on Smoke News Radio.
A
billion people died on the news tonight. But not so many cried at the terrible sight. Well, Mama said, it's just make believe. You can't believe everything you see. So, baby, close your eyes. Who's the one to decide that it would be all right to put the music behind the news tonight? Well, Mama said, can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears. on the news tonight, on the news tonight.
The 10 seconds.
Jones on the news tonight. The mama said,